Welcome to another edition of Everyone Hates Cleveland, our bi-monthly podcast. Whenever we can get to.
I don't know. Look at this guy. Look at this guy.
We did five in a week, and then we didn't do anything since then. But it's not like, I don't know. I guess. Well, first of all, we got Mike like eating tacos in Salt Lake City. We got Gage, who just comes back from a 4-for-5 performance tonight in softball, and me drinking a Slurpee. I guess that really sums up this podcast, doesn't it?
A little worried about the Slurpee problems, Joe.
I love Slurpees, man.
Little worried. You know, you're like in your 40s. Slurpees. Slurpees gotta Slurpees go, in, bro.
Slurpees and sunflower seeds. He's like 12.
Okay. All right. On that note, we'll see you next week. All right. Well, let's just jump right into this. There's a lot of different directions we can go. I could start off with something volatile, but I won't. In many ways, this team has, I don't know. I never know how to look at the Indians in April because under Francona, we've historically been bad other than a year or two. Just kind of looking at the overall scheme of things, let's look at Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor. Normally two boring topics of conversation because they're always so good. Lindor being out all year, coming back this week. Jose Ramirez breaking out today, 3-for-4 home run. Nice double. Almost hit for the cycle. Obviously, a pretty big deal. The Indians, you know, kind of treading water without Lindor and Jose Ramirez. Well, let's talk Jose Ramirez first. Let's start with Gage. How concerned are you about the swing? Everybody keeps talking about the swing, and we've bantered about it quite a bit. How concerned are we about J. Ram's start this year?
Not. I don't know. It's still April. I don't care what he did last year. I'm not going to get hung up on going, well, he finished the year this, and then he started this year this, and it must be related. No, I don't think they're related. I think it's April. He's taking a little while to come out. He did the same thing last year, maybe to a lesser degree. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at about a 1 with J-Ram. There's just no reason to get worried in April.
Yeah, no, he's been bad for a half a season. Thing's total BS. I'm so sick of that. It's really dumb.
The favorite comment I saw was his three-month slump last year. Dude hit 330 in July, but he went on a three-month slump.
I know. He was still running like a 120 WRC plus in the second half. Oh, God. Oh, God.
I think it was 114 in August. He struggled in August, no doubt, but I mean,
114 still, is struggling.
Still, that's his struggling, you know. But everything's about, you know, batting average.
The only reasons things like this worry me is I worry about players making bad adjustments, to be honest. You know, Jose Ramirez is always going to hit. I just don't want him to get in such a funk that, like, he makes bad adjustments like the ones Terry Pluto recommended. Which, you know, like, he's really got to do the Santana, go the other way. It's like he hit 38 home runs last year because he just started picking a target in the zone and hitting that ball out of the ballpark to the pole field. But yeah, let's cut his power in thirds and try and go oppo, which is pretty difficult and sometimes a real waste because it saps your power. Great call. Good stuff. Good call. Can't wait.
Well, we get on this wave, and I think this year, early in the year, everybody's talking about shifts and getting rid of them and hitting against them and doing things like that. And I think it's funny how people just sort of kind of walk down the same path as everybody else.
No, J-Ram's fine. And he was fine before this game today. We all knew it. I didn't need Terry Francona to tell me that.
The worst part about the hit it the other way, bull line of bull that is supposedly unmocking Santana, is the anecdotal bias that it provides to Van Berkelio and the rest of the staff. Like, oh, hey, it worked for Santana. Let's tell everybody to hit it the other way. That's what I'm terrified about. All of a sudden, Lindor is going to be hitting 142-mile-per-hour rockets on the ground to the left side of the infield.
Yeah, I mean, I think, thankfully, the Indians hitting coach and their internal development and decision-making staff is less stupid than the people on Twitter and writing columns.
I hope so. God, I hope that's true.
That always makes me feel good. Yeah, you know what? Let's turn Let's turn our 8-WAR power hitter who steals bases into a guy who slaps the ball the other way. That'll be good.
Break the shift. Got to break the shift.
How dumb are these people? Anyway.
On that note.
No, the reason that he can lay a bunt down the third baseline is because the other team is saying, I don't care if you get onto first base. We've done our job.
Yeah. Like, they're begging him to take the ball the other way. Other teams literally beg him to do that.
Speaking of Carlos Santana in the middle of all this, you know, Mike, starting with you here, like, what do you attribute this early season sort of, I don't even want to call it a breakout. Like, what have you seen different from Carlos Santana this year as opposed to previous seasons with the Indians, even with Philly last year? Well, I mean, struggled the first half of the season. You know, where is he at in his career right now? And are you seeing something that's he's going to be able to repeat? Or are you seeing – or is it just, you know, one of those quote-unquote streaks?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is pretty streaky. I think he's better than he was last year in Philadelphia, and I think he's just more comfy. And, I mean, I think there's a lot of signs of that. I think Philly was a different experience for him. I don't really think this is super sustainable. He's done this before for periods of time, if you pull his rolling batting charts. I mean, I think the positive is that he probably will hit for more power than he is right now. But, I mean, he's not going to hit 290. I just don't think that's ever going to be – I just don't see this. I really just want the 20 home runs, 5 steals, and 15% walk rate, which is exactly what we're getting.
I worry about that approach with Santana. His launch angle is at the lowest it's at in its career. He's hitting the ball harder than he ever has, but it's all into the ground. He's hitting 109 mile per hour sizzlers. So maybe it progresses into pulling some homers, but he's got to get a little more lift.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to go away. He's got to stop hitting the ball low to the opposite field. I know it's sexy. It's sex. You know what is so vapid about this BS is you have these old school guys who are like, we're so smart. We know so much more. Data has hidden so much of our wit. We're so smart that we can talk about the opposite field. What nuance. How clever we are. And it's like, yeah, it suppresses run scoring. Great damn job. Like, I don't know why I have to care about this stuff. It's like the only thing Rick Manning ever talks about on a broadcast. Heaven forbid a guy can hit 2 dongs, but like Tyler Naquin goes oppo with a single in the 8th, and they always say, oh, you know, he's really clicking when he's hitting the ball the other way like that. Shut the hell up. That's a bad thing. Anyway.
Or, you know, he's really got it going when he's got a line drive single off a lefty into center field.
Yeah. You know, Kipnis really has it going when he's slapping the ball over the shortstop's head in an unsustainable manner. God, I love baseball. God, you're terrible. I hate this stuff.
That sand wedge right in front of the left fielder. Gotta love it.
All right, guys.
Way to hit a flare, man.
Let's talk bunting.
I think we're good. Hating on bunting has become too popular. I'm going to follow the old school and really zag. You know.
Everybody bunt. More bunts.
More bunts.
Bunts and oppo. There's the title of this podcast right there. All right. I want to talk rotation really quick. And I guess, Gage, I'm going to start with you on this. A little bit about Carlos Carrasco, who's kind of rubber banded a little bit back and forth. I mean, is there worry there with you? I mean, I know you're fairly high on Carrasco. To be honest, we all are. Is there concern there? You know, he looked pretty good the other day, even though he got hit. Seems to be getting hit a little bit with some bad luck injuries. Any concern there with his early season struggles?
So I would say that there's some concern about some velocity dips. That's a kind of a progressive trend, but I want to counter that immediately because I'm convinced that there's nobody in baseball that adjusts to combat velo shortcomings better than he does. He's lost a half a mile per hour on his fastball each of the last 4 years or so, but the swinging strikes don't go away. The strikeouts don't go away. He's finding ways to make hitters whiff with his slider, with his changeup, with his placement on his fastball. You talk about Jose Ramirez as a hitting savant. I'm truly convinced that Carlos Carrasco is a pitching savant.
Wow.
It's really fascinating to me watching him zig and zag with the slider and changeup. I don't think that there's anybody I like watching more.
Man, Gage coming out firing here. Jeff Nauman is going to lose it when he listens to this. He's going to be like, wow, somebody loves Carrasco as much as I do.
And Lonnie Chisenhall sucks.
He does. To be honest, can we talk about that? Lonnie does suck. Okay, we're done.
And Meredith Chisenhall called me a dick on Twitter, so I'm not going to let that die. Anyway, Carlos Carrasco.
How's Chisenhall doing this year?
Hurt? Oh, he's not on the field. It's as if staying healthy is somewhat a skill.
No.
He's got the calves of a goat.
Okay, Carlos Carrasco. Mike.
He seems good at pitching. I'm a fan of his. Nah, Carrasco's really good. I'm not super concerned about him yet. I guess I'm not concerned. He's fine. You know what? He does have a lot of weird injury stuff. And I know we call them all freaky, but like, I do wonder if he doesn't set himself up well to defend his position. And that's why he gets dinged all the time. Cause he gets a lot of injuries, random injuries on balls hit back at him and injuries when he's trying to cover first. And I really, whatever, it's irrelevant. I don't want to do a correlation thing.
So you're saying the cookie crumbles a little bit too easily.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I would like that removed from the podcast as well.
No. I'm going to raise the volume of that. That's going to stand out. That's getting like, bold face.
Can you do a 5-second lead in? Can you like cut up what Gage said? So you're saying 5 seconds of break. Whatever.
All right. So let's talk about your favorite starter, Corey Kluber.
I thought you meant Shane Bieber when you said favorite starter.
Well, that's not the route we're going. I do want to talk about Bieber, but I do want to talk about Kluber. Only because it seems like everything that you guys were talking about prior to the season, the concerns, they seem to be fairly legit, and it's April. You know, I mean, are you guys worried about, you know, Kluber running up 100-plus pitch counts in April in another year in which he's taking a massive dip in velocity? Mike.
Give the floor to Mike.
No, it seems good to me. I would really nuke his arm with 2.5 years left on his contract. That's what I'd do. Instead of dealing him this offseason for 80 cents on the dollar, I'd just make sure you get 0 cents and a grumpy former Cy Young Award winner. Now, I think Gage has tweeted some stuff about this, though. I do think there's like a route to him being a lot more productive again. I think it is, you know, he's got to go more heavy usage on his secondaries again like he has in the past to be successful. I really like to say this in front of Gage because I think I just stole his point, and now he's trying to think of what he's going to say since I'm talking, which makes this most satisfying. But no, I think that's a big part of it. I think we saw it last year. I mean, I think Pete Kluber, I think it's gone. And it was gone last year. I mean, I think he's really, really good, but he's just probably not great anymore, and he may just be good. And that's fine. Like, the Indians can win with that. But, yeah, I mean, he's losing velocity. He walked four guys in a start recently, 5 guys. That, to me, is the most concerning. You know, I'm writing a guy who, like, I mean, he's a lot like Bieber. He's a plus-plus command guy who, like, his fastball velocity has never been particularly elite, but it was really helpful at 94. And now we're talking 91, 92, and when he's walking a ton of guys, that's when it gets really scary.
Which never happens, and I think his walk rate right now is over 4 per 9, so definitely a concern that we haven't seen before. I do appreciate the fact that you just said he's a little like Bieber, which is an interesting comment to make, but let's serve it over to Gage. Is he the kind of pitcher, Gage, that you can see being effective in October? And I know it's April, but I think this is what we're looking at right now. Do you see him as a pitcher who can be effective in October throwing, you know, becoming more of a secondary offering kind of guy, more of a junk baller?
Yeah, I think he needs to play up the curveball. That's the most mystifying thing to me, not the velocity drop and as he's aging and the wear and tear on his arm. And maybe I'm guessing he gets some of that velo back as the season goes on. But why just abandon your best pitch that was – for 2-3 years, one of the best pitches in baseball? I don't get it. He spiked it all the way up to 30% towards the end of 16, beginning of 17. Mm-hmm. And last year, it just died. So I have a couple – I mean, is it a health thing? Is he worried about throwing it? Is he favoring something in his arm that is not wanting him to throw it as much. I don't really know what's going on, but it seems like he was at the forefront of that curveball usage spike. So there's got to be something there.
It's almost right at the same level it was last year, right around 22, 23%. I mean, it can't be a confidence thing. You know, you see a pitcher like Trevor Bauer, who slowly but surely incorporates all of his pitches as the year progresses. You know, I mean, have you seen any good reason whatsoever to have him stop throwing that curveball? He was using almost 30% of the time in 2017, I think it was.
I haven't seen – I can't – that's why I'm thinking there's more to it. Like, that maybe even the Indians don't know, or that he's – I'm not suggesting any.
I mean, his whiff percentage is still at 40%.
Along those lines. I do want – if you had to place odds for it, that on April 24th, Jeffrey Rodriguez would have a higher game score in the 2019 year than Corey Kluber has had all year.
Are we going to tamp down Gage's Jeffrey Rodriguez hype here?
I mean, if he stopped pitching today, like he's already done more than I thought he would do this year, especially since I didn't see him as a starter. I mean, is this, Gage, we talked a lot about him preseason, about him being maybe a revelation in the bullpen. Is him being a good starter, like, killing that?
Is it? Not if they have five starters that are healthy, right? They got to find some way for him to help the club. And you can only use four starters in the playoffs. So I think you almost have to consider that if you got guys that are healthy in July.
All right.
Especially if he keeps pitching well. I don't want to jump the Jeffrey Rodriguez train too much. That was more about Kluber, how he's performed so far. Like, Rodriguez's outing today against Miami was better than Kluber's done in his first five starts.
Any thoughts, Mike, on Rodriguez? Anything you want to temper?
No, it has been nice. And I do want to – he's fascinating to me. Another guy who I think is underthrowing the curveball. He threw it at like 14% today, and he threw his two fastballs, his four-seam and his two-seam, like 70%, 60%. 65-70%. I really would like to see what he looks like if he's using his curveball like 25-30%. I think he will get more strikeouts, and his ground ball rates are awesome. I mean, that two-seamer looks really heavy. I don't know. I'm pretty fascinated by him, but yeah.
Well, I think that's a major case for him to spend a lot of time in AAA, is to kind of figure out that arsenal. I mean, you become dependent on a, you know, 95 to 98 mile an hour fastball. It's easy to let go of those secondary pitches, but I'm still a little bit surprised that they picked him to come up. I mean, Gage called it, but I still felt like he was a guy that they would wait a bit on, and they haven't waited on him. So obviously he's showing him something in the minor leagues. I don't know. He's going to be one of the most interesting watches this year, especially with Clevinger out, you know, coming up every, you know, two or three weeks and making a start here and there. It'll be interesting to see how he progresses. And, you know, segueing a little bit into the bullpen, you know, I mean, how bad does this Indians team need a guy like Brad Hand? And I mean, you're not going to get another guy like Brad Hand easily, but, you know, Mike, you talked about this earlier in the year. It seems like the Indians need this, you know, actually need a reliever who's a little bit more malleable than any of the guys that they seem to have. Is Rodriguez a guy that potentially could fill a role where it seems like we have Brad Hand and a bunch of guys who have to face, you know, either lefties or have to face righties, because when they try to do both, it's a nightmare. Do you see anybody in the system right now who could maybe fill that role, Mike?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm pretty high on James Karinchak. We have like seven innings of him being awesome. He always strikes out a ton of dudes, and he's also shown massive walk rates. And he is kind of a wonky release point. So it's great that he hasn't walked many guys so far this year. I mean, I think it's really worth pushing the levers on him. But, I mean, I'm still pretty nervous about him. I think he's probably the most interesting right now. I think Rodriguez, and I've said this a million times, I mean, the Rodriguez who Anderson thing is just, like, fundamentally unbelievable to me. I do not know why. If you want to keep one of those guys in the rotation as depth, fine. But, I mean, they're all guys who, in the rotation, I mean, Rodriguez is throwing harder, but who is throwing like 92, 93 and is flashing like 7? Anderson is throwing like 92, 94. He's flashed 95, 96. And he is you know, both those guys are better if they're just pared down to two pitches. So, you know, I actually think there's interesting bodies there, but we're not going to do anything with them this flipping season because we're acting like they need to still be developed as starters. So, I mean, I think you could have more interesting arms than you do, but right now it's just like Karinchak is carving dudes. Nick Sandlin's finally healthy in AA. He can move really fast, potentially. I mean, those are the two guys that I think are most likely.
Well, and they've historically moved guys pretty quickly that they've loved. I mean, is Karinchak one of those guys? I mean, it's, you know, Allen moved through the system basically in a year. I mean, is Karinchak someone you see moving from Akron to Columbus fairly soon? So maybe we could see him in late June, early July?
Yeah, I would not be surprised to see him in late May, early June. Wouldn't be surprised at all.
What about AJ Cole?
Meh.
Ringing endorsement.
What do you think about him, Jim?
Let's swing it over to Gay. I don't really have a lot of thoughts on him. I know he's sitting down there just as another arm to bring up, but I it doesn't, you know, in other seasons, it seems like the Indians have kind of bounced around a lower end, and, you know, we've got guys like Neil Ramirez and Dan Otero who are what they are, but it doesn't seem like, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like they, I don't know. It's April, so we still have time. It's usually we start seeing them dip into the pool a little bit, and it doesn't seem like they're willing to do that. Gage, thoughts?
As for AJ, well, first of all, I know that if I'm a 27-year-old middling prospect reliever, I'm not going to hire Hattery as my PR director.
I mean, but, what do you want me to say?
I can't offer much more on Cole. There's a reason he's been with three franchises in 9 years. It's not like the Yankees are in a hurry, or four franchises, sorry. It's not like the Yankees are in a hurry to give up on relievers, and the Nationals could sure use them. But I don't want to discount what Adam Simber's done when we're talking about the bullpen. He, aside from probably costing them the Saturday night game, which everybody's going to remember, he's been
funny. I don't remember him about that, though. It's funny. It's Simber I'm not thinking about when you mentioned that. Stop mentioning that.
Maybe he shouldn't have been facing left-handed hitters.
God! Okay, hold on a second.
He shouldn't have been doing that. So I don't know, though.
Two in a row. Two. Guess what? Tito forever. Sorry.
Do you have a little pent-up aggression about that? Or?
God. Leadership is the key to any good major league manager. Leadership. What the? Okay. I'm muting my – go.
You know what's great, too? From the leadership perspective, what's really delightful is like how everybody's like, yeah, he's a really hands-off leader. Nobody really the only time he really communicates is when like people go to him.
This is like the perfect. Is it not the perfect job?
All the leaders are veterans, and it's you get to manage a bunch of talented tryhards. Like
that. I mean, this is the perfect job. You get a job where you're hands-off. And you have a bunch of veterans who don't need to say anything to you. So what do? You just wait until a guy can't speak the language, and then you bitch about him.
Apparently, you also spill ice cream on yourself at night and fall asleep on other fast food and endear yourself to fans.
Oh, God.
He rolled over in nachos, guys. What a guy.
We're endearing ourselves to a whole lot of fans with this podcast, let me tell you.
It's okay. I've already been told that I'm not allowed to exercise opinions on him unless they're unless I dollop about 2 hours of praise, then I'm allowed to. I'm always informed as to what the right thing to say is by my antagonistic Twitter following.
So Gage, I'm sorry, I did interrupt actually a really good conversation we were having about Adam Simber, and I apologize. To be honest, Adam Simber, for all three of us, when they traded for him, he is a unique pitcher, especially from arm angle perspective. And as you were saying, Gage, and I'm going to try to lead you back into it. when utilized correctly, I think Adam Simber provides a really good value for the Cleveland Indians, even in high leverage situations.
Yeah, and I haven't looked into the data on it, so I'm kind of out on a limb here. But I would say that he's got a ton of movement. on those pitches that just didn't seem like it was there at the end of last year. I don't know if it's – it doesn't seem fluky to me because everything he's throwing looks good. That's purely subjective. There's no data behind it. I've just enjoyed watching him pitch. And the most fascinating part about his acquisition for me is still the Indians had their eye – that the front office had their eye on him since April of last year. He was targeted. He wasn't a throw-in. He was a targeted piece of the hand.
I will note it would seemingly align with their pursuit of low release point pitchers, which I really think is the under-discussed subplot, which is a big plug for reading one of my articles about the Indians. But it turns out if you have pitchers with lower release points, it makes the contact point, which is something Gage and I and Jim talk about a lot, which we don't have an ability to track, but the contact point is really important, and throwing off someone's contact point lowers their exit velocity. And I think one really cheap way to do it, it looks like right now, is to buy a bunch of sidearm or submarine guys, hence Nick Sandlin and Adam Simber and Robert Broom and five other guys.
So I would even almost throw a Tyler Olson in there. He's got a out to the side wing too. He's not fully submarine, but he does have an awkward release point.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about the minor league system. But before I get to that, I mean, do you guys have any general thoughts on April? Like, it seems like there's a lot of optimism, you know, on Twitter right now with the 13-10 record. I love this team in a lot of different ways. I love it. I worry about the bottom end of the order, and I do want to kind of talk a little bit about Gage's piece before we talk minor league really quick. And Gage, you wrote a piece today talking about the outfield, and I think that, you know, the makeup of our outfield is odd, to say the least. You know, I think you're looking at four lefties and a switch hitter who historically hits lefties, you know, who historically hits the wrong side better. But you talked today about a couple of guys that could make a difference simply because they aren't lefties. You know, one with upside and maybe one who is, but never got a shot. I mean, you know, if you look at a guy like Oscar Mercado and you look at a guy like Luplo as potential fixes, what are we really looking at ceiling wise here? And I know Oscar Mercado probably has a higher ceiling. In reality, what are we looking at here as far as makeup goes? I mean, this is obviously something that's going to have to get addressed. But my question to you is, like, who, other than Greg Allen, we probably need to make a maybe more than one player move. But I mean, is Greg Allen the guy that you send down? And are they really going to be doing that?
With the Greg Allen stuff kind of mystifies me because I don't think he's doing you a lot of favors as a bench bat. Either way, he might be something good. He might not be something. He might not ever be able to hit enough. We're still trying to figure that out, but you're never going to figure it out with him as a bench bat in Cleveland. So if I'm going to move one of these guys up, I would probably send Greg Allen down to get regular at-bats in that Columbus outfield and basically give Cargo and Naquin the floor and say, you guys, you got a month until something else is going to happen. Cargo, I had somebody come at me on Twitter today about – Cargo's hitting over 300. He has five singles and like two walks. He can't get the ball in the air. Hitting 300 with rolling infield singles isn't going to make me excited. I'm sorry. So he's got to find some extra base hits for me
doing the right thing? Is he going the other way? Because that's all that matters. That's all that matters to these people. Is he going the other way? Check.
The negative
spray chart tomorrow, first thing in the morning.
Yeah, we can really highlight those two infield singles with a shortstop.
Hey, man, that's what you got to do to get out of a skid. You go the other way.
Hey, Michael Braley's doing some things. Let's talk about that.
Man, I actually looked at his stat line. Is he doing things?
Hey, he's just doing. Yeah, he's going oppo too, though. So
good for him.
Is good.
Good for him.
Well, that's how you know he's keyed in.
It's keyed in.
So back to this. Do you think that, you know, Mercado high upside? Yeah, I mean, do you see? I mean, they're not going to bring him up. I mean, if you're sending Greg Allen down because he's not getting playing time, I mean, you're not bringing up Oscar Mercado. And if you've already set down a guy, I mean, is this an option you see, you know, Francona or the front office making right now? Mike, no, I'm going to send it. No, go ahead, Gage.
Oh, no. I just want to grandstand and say, if you are comfortable giving Jordan Luplo the opening day opportunity, why are you bailing on him after 12 plate appearances?
Why not, Gage? I don't know, you went the other way.
Yeah.
Who's your guy in the outfield, Mike?
It's Mercado. I think it's going to happen in the next week and a half.
God, do you really mean that? Or are you just?
I really absolutely mean that. I think that as soon as they started playing him in the corner outfield spot, it was a sign that they were going to get pretty aggressive with him, because Martin is the lock-in center fielder right now. And Oscar Mercado is only playing a corner spot if they're looking to have him ready, like, right now. He played left field in Columbus tonight. That's a pretty strong sign to me that I think they're ready to move forward with Mercado.
So, I mean, he's coming up to play full time. You're not bringing him up to, you know, give him five plate appearances a week. So who goes down?
I think it might be time to play taps for Tyler. My hair's nice. Naquin. I think it might be time.
Ooh.
Maybe a little burial. Maybe it's time to put him to sleep.
Hey, if you're going Mercado for him, I'm good.
I mean, I could see Allen going down, and we can keep doing this charade with Mr. Naquin. That could happen too. I mean, I think they're still going to try and get Bowers 450 PAs this year. I think Gonzalez is going to get significant opportunities before he's done, and Martin's your lock and center. I think right field is where, like, it would make sense. They played him in left today, which obviously undercuts my thesis, but I do think that, and maybe they move Bowers to right. Bowers is probably just going to DH all the time now, which I think is a horrid waste of skills.
Hi.
The worst thing they can do.
Do you think Cargo DHs all the time?
God, I can't. Naquin should.
They should just take all of Naquin's bats away.
I'm most interested in how this all plays out, because you watch him the first 3 weeks of the season play in left field, and you can't come away from that not thinking that the guy is athletic enough to be a really good left fielder. And then all of a sudden, as you sit here and kind of ponder their plays in the outfield, you know, it really looks like Bowers by, you know, at the latest mid-May or June might just not have a place to play in the outfield, which is odd considering the bunch of guys that we're talking about. And this is no rip on them, but, you know, I mean, Bowers is going to be like a DH first baseman by the end of the year, and he seems to be one of the most athletic players on the team and one of the fastest players on the team to boot.
Yeah, he's way more athletic than Tyler Naquin. I don't really have any doubt.
Did he throw somebody out at the plate the other day?
Yeah, we have the sprint speed data, and Bowers has a good arm. And if anyone says Naquin has a good arm, I'd like to see the ball more than 5 feet off the ground sometime. That's all I have to say. If he spikes one more throw.
I'm not trying to fire anybody up here, but do you remember everything they used to say about Lonnie Chisenhall, how he could play center field because he was so athletic? Like, I mean, is there anybody on this podcast right now that doesn't think that Jake Bowers in his sleep is like a far superior athlete?
He's a far superior athlete.
Yeah, I just.
I mean, I don't think he could play. I'm not sure he could play center, but that guy needs a ton of reps in the outfield because he can defend out there. He is really fast and has a good arm.
Well, like, I don't know why he was developed as
a first baseman. What were they doing?
Are you insinuating that Lonnie Chisenhall was a good center fielder?
No, never. He was handsome, though, and he had that, like, one season of 60 games where he posted a bunch of DRS, and we all acted like he was a Gold Glove caliber outfielder instead of just DRS noise. Like, yeah, he was a good defender, but that was absurd.
Yeah, but how – I mean, like, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but he definitely has been developed as a primary first baseman over his career. Left field seems to be something that people have tinkered with. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
I don't get why he wasn't treated as an outfielder more aggressively, and it may just because I don't know the Rays system super well, and they may have an insane amount of athletic outfielders they wanted to work in. But I mean, he's so athletic that it just seems it's so rare to have someone that athletic get pigeonholed for first base at that young an age.
How is Bowers the odd man out in the outfield potentially? I mean, do you think that's true, or am I just overblowing this?
That I'm terrified of that. That's my biggest fear of personnel decisions this year is just not giving him the floor for the whole season.
You really need him. You really need him long term.
Yeah.
He's really got to work. I mean, so does Mercado.
You need him to be that, basically what you said about Santana, that 20 homer, 15% walk guy.
And I think that's there. It is. It's in there.
Well, we'll see about that. I just.
Whoa.
I see it maybe more as a DH first baseman. I just don't see him playing in the outfield. I guess it doesn't matter at the end of the day, but I mean, and Cargo can defend. I don't know. I mean, it seems like if they're going to bring Mercado up, what do you sign Cargo for? I mean, a three week rental.
I don't know why they did anything, man. I don't know why they signed Cameron Maben and Cargo. And Cargo's fine. I'm fine with Cargo.
God.
To be fair, Cargo's the one that I dislike the least.
All right. Minor leagues. Michael, since you mentioned it on Twitter, is there anybody you'd like to talk about? Anybody standing out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was just chatting about, like, I think there, you always want to, like, you know, qualify with sample size, but there's some fun stuff definitely early that you want to look at. Like, Daniel Johnson has been showing the same amount of power as he showed back when he was healthy in 2017 and was the Washington Nationals minor league player of the year. And he's shown a massive walk rate spike. And that could be super noisy. Granted, it should be closer to stable at this point. He's got 70 PAs, but that's a really positive sign. And if you get that from him, if you can get a high walk rate, then you're locking in like a 330 OBP. And he just has to get into that power, which he is. I mean, there's so many tools that walk rate just locks in his floor so nicely. So that's something to really track. And the other is Jod Carter, whose name I did not expect to mention. But no, he's been super impressive. He's shown massive ISO. And we talked about this. He's 22, which is about the average age for high A, maybe a tick above average. Struggled in double A in a limited sample last year, but he's all of a sudden pulling the baseball a bunch and hitting the ball in the air a bunch, and oh, turns out that produces power. He has an ISO spike. So those are just some guys where you're like, this is a small sample, let's sort of track it.
Well, I mean if you think about system, if you think about the Indians and how they move players, Mike, you know, you mentioned that dip into double A last year. I mean, I think the fact that they gave him a dip into double A last year maybe says a little bit about what they think about him. It also may have spurred on a swing change, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. It could be. I mean, I'm really anxious to see, you know, I'll be looking at him at different check marks, but I want to see, you know, what his batted ball profile looks like every 50 PAs, because I think this is pretty fascinating. He's a decent athlete. He's an outfielder. Another thing that I would rant about quickly is, like, the Indians need to stop having to deal for guys like Jordan Luplow. Like, I think Luplow is interesting, but the fact that the Indians had to go get a guy who was just almost borderline interesting for their outfield corners is kind of scary, and I think that's why you want to see more Carters and guys flashing some interesting stuff. I mean, this is very interesting in the same way that they're not high pedigree guys, but they're flashing a bunch of production, and you're kind of just seeing if they've, you know, unlocked stuff. So they need that from Carter.
All right. One big segue here as we wrap the podcast up is to check out Gage Will, who's been carrying the site this week with a couple of pieces this week. The one I mentioned on the outfielders, and had a piece yesterday as well. So make sure you check out the website. We will get more regular with this. I'll be writing almost every day over the summer. First of all, thank you to everybody who's been reading us. It's been a fun first month and a half of the site. So make sure you check everything out at the site. Please, please, please make sure you check out the podcast. We will get regular with this at some point. We're like three old men trying to get together on these podcasts. Kind of interesting in and of itself. We could probably do a whole podcast on that. So check out Mike at Snarky Hat Man. Check out Gage at Gage EHC. I don't even know what mine is. At Jim Pete EHC?
Yep.
Yeah.
Check out those three. Please do this one last thing. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe and tell one person about it so they do too. We're trying to get to like 20 or 30 or so by the end of the month. That would be really cool. Guys, anything you want to push onto the public?
Read Gage. I haven't written anything worth reading. I will, I promise.
Or don't.
All right. We'll see you in about 2 weeks for our bi-monthly podcast. Peace.
Have a good night, everybody.